Terry's group of three aircraft dropped their torpedoes, and I know John Moffett wrote a book, I Sank the Bismarck, but nobody really knows whose torpedoes actually hit Bismarck. Terry's guys dropped their torpedoes, and immediately when you take a 5,000-pound aircraft and get rid of 2,000 pounds, the aircraft pops up immediately, and when you pop up, now you're into the AAA, you're into the machine gun fire off of Bismarck. So how did Terry and every single aircraft make it back to the Ark Royal? The Germans thought nobody would have the audacity to attack the biggest battleship in the world with something that went 80 miles an hour. All their lead deflection, all of their practice and training, they'd only gone down to, and I can't remember, is it 110 or 120 knots? So all of the swordfish, although quite severely damaged, some of them, all of the swordfish that attack Bismarck make it home. Terry ends up flying directly overhead Bismarck at 3,000 feet. You can't turn. The easiest and the quickest way is to fly right overhead. He tells the story of, as they flew overhead Bismarck, you could see that it had been wounded. Not mortally, but it had been wounded by the constant shelling. When the torpedoes were all dropped in the water, what Bismarck did is it turned into the torpedoes. It's called combing the torpedoes. If you can imagine a bunch of torpedoes coming through the water, what Bismarck wanted to do was turn into the torpedoes. So turning like, and by turning into the torpedoes, it lessens the surface area that's exposed. And while she was turning to port, one of the torpedoes hit the steering mechanism of Bismarck, and it had a very complex steering mechanism. And because the ship was in the turn to comb the torpedoes, one of the torpedoes hit the steering mechanism and locked the rudder over 12 degrees left. Now, two more torpedoes hit Bismarck and damaged her below the waterline, just forward of the engine compartment, and that caused some significant flooding. But what really crippled Bismarck was the rudder 12 degrees over to the left. So now Bismarck, all she could do was left-hand turns. And I'm not a Navy guy, I'm an Air Force guy, but I know if all my aircraft could do is left-hand turns in combat, it would not be a pleasant sight. Of course, now that Bismarck is crippled in left-hand turns, they took successive waves. So now Terry's got to go back to Bismarck. All the aircraft back on the Ark Royal, they pushed the heavily damaged aircraft into the sea. By that time, they'd repaired some of the aircraft. I think they had duct tape, maybe. Yeah, that'd be the 80-mile-an-hour version of the duct tape. Repaired the aircraft, loaded torpedoes. They realized now that the contactor torpedoes were the ones to use. And they went and attacked Bismarck again. And yes, they put more holes in her. But by this time, it's evident that she's mortally wounded. And they kept shelling Bismarck to prove a lesson that they didn't want any way that Bismarck would slip away from her until she slipped under the sea. And unfortunately for the swordfish guys, the shelling stopped on Bismarck. All the gun turns were blown off. It was evident she was only in left-hand turns. Men were jumping overboard off of Bismarck. And I don't remember the name of the ship that went up close to Bismarck to pick up survivors. Unfortunately, at this stage, U-boats showed up in the area. And so that's why there's so few survivors off of Bismarck. They left it go. Now, the controversy remains, was the ship scuttled or not? And I can't speak to that at all. But I do understand that the captain of the Bismarck, who was, I'm sorry, not the captain, the first officer, anyway, the number two boat guy. There's a lot of controversy that he scuttled the ship. The captain had been killed. And whether that happened or not, I don't know, but Bismarck took another 2,000 lives with her. So in a very, very short period of time, there's 2,000 British sailors from the Hood and 2,000 German sailors from Bismarck that disappeared. What it did do is it changed the course of the battle in the North Atlantic. Two very significant things took place. One was the Germans were not invincible. The most powerful battleship in the world had been attacked and mortally wounded by a Bismarck, and as if it was a precursor to that, U-554, which was one of the U-boats that was assigned as a shepherd to the Bismarck, the captain of U-554 had written a letter to Bismarck on Bismarck's preparations for her maiden voyage saying, I'm going to protect you. We have an electronic copy of that letter. But the interesting thing is he drew pictures of swordfish attacking Bismarck and how 554 was going to protect Bismarck. And we find all these connections, just startling. Life goes on. Bismarck sunk. Johnny Horton writes the song, and we all lived happily ever after.
Wow! Thank you. You're a very humble man. I asked you before the presentation, do you know a little bit about the story? And you said, a little bit. That is beautiful. I've had a really good week here at AirVenture. I've sat next to Jim Lovell, Apollo 13 commander. I heard the story about Thomas Hudner. I just heard about the Bismarck. History has been my hobby ever since I was a little kid. And filming this today is Sleeping Dog Productions over in Green Lake, Wisconsin. And I don't know if you watch the military channel and the history channel like I do, but on the military channel, there's a series right now called Missions That Changed the War. Have you seen it? Have all of you seen it? It's beautiful. Yeah. Doolittle Raiders, Gunter Rall, who was my friend, passed away in 09. Tex Hill, who was my second dad, passed away in 07. But it's important that we get this history down and get it on film, so to speak. I know it's all digital nowadays, but those guys are doing great work. It's John Tennyson and Scott Guyette right there on the camera, and I want to recognize them. Right now, I'm going to take a couple of questions from the audience. Does anyone have a question for these gentlemen? Come to me.
About all the moving parts in this Pegasus engine. Does this airplane engine hold the record for the most moving parts in the
whole? The most moving parts in the Pegasus?
I don't think so. That's bigger brother, the Centaurus, the sleeve valve engine with its gear mechanism. That, I think, holds the record for most moving parts. This one's basically a conventional radial engine. With an exposed valve train mechanism, though, so it's actually quite basic for a radial engine.
Anyone else? Questions?
You mentioned early on that it sunk more submarines than any other aircraft. I assume that most of those were surface attacks. Did they attack with torpedoes, bombs, or depth charges?
Well, no, that's a very good question. Yes. Two schools of thought. The nickname for this airplane is the string bag. And one school of thought says, I should back up a little bit. A string bag would look like, it's an English term for a bag that ladies would use when they'd go to market, and it would be a bag and it would have a drawstring at the top, so you could put, there's one right over there. So they call this aircraft the string bag. So one of the schools of thought is that because it has so many flying wires and bits and pieces that it looks like the drawstrings of a lady's string bag. But the school of thought that I follow is, you can put anything in a string bag. You can put bananas, oranges, apples, bread, and the same thing with the swordfish. The swordfish carried rockets, it carried bombs, it carried depth charges, and it carried torpedoes. And because it was such a versatile aircraft, because it could carry all these things, that probably helped in its success rate at sinking submarines. There was another thing that helped with the success rate of sinking submarines. They could use these almost anywhere. They did not have to fly these off of aircraft carriers, and these aircraft did a lot of missions launched off of destroyers like we talked about, and it did a lot of missions later on in the Battle of the Atlantic. They took tankers and they welded decks on tankers. So the good news is you got a place to land when you come home. Bad news is you're sitting on, I don't know, 100 trillion gallons of avgas. But because the aircraft were so slow and could carry such a phenomenal load, and they were extremely robust, that these aircraft could be deployed almost off of any platform at all. In fact, because of its landing speed, wind speed, and the ship's relative speed, there are stories that the swordfish couldn't catch up to the ship to come back to land on it. But the more important thing was its carrying capability. So yes, they attacked submarines with almost anything, and if they ran out of torpedoes, they just started hanging depth charges on them and send them out to patrol. And if they ran out of depth charges, they hung rockets. I think it was 4.75-inch, I'm not exactly sure, rockets. And when they ran out of that, I don't know, they threw the garbage on the submarines.
I would like everybody involved with Vintage Wings of Canada to stand at this time and be recognized, all you guys. You know, Canadians have always been some of our finest allies, and I want to thank you so much for coming today. Gentlemen, Vintage Wings of Canada.
Thanks again, Dan.
I know. We're out.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much. Yeah.